And?
Hello, this is Dan.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm pretty well. How are you doing, Ed?
Good. Good, good. I just saw Bill Gordon.
You saw Bill Gordon? Oh,
I
haven't seen him in a long time.
I did. He told me that as president of the University of New Mexico, if there wasn't Division I sport, medical university, he would have had nothing to do.
Wow. I gave him some ideas of things to do, but, you know, but he didn't stick around enough. So.
They're in the medical school, though. So.
Yeah, I know. I know. But
it caused all the headaches.
Yeah.
Sports, Division I sports in the medical school. Takes up 70% of his time.
I can imagine that.
Hello, Tom and Kathy.
Hello there.
Hello.
How are you?
Great. How about you?
I'm doing well, thank you. You're getting all ready for your big gala event?
Yeah. Yeah, the awards reception.
Now, when is that again?
It's next Tuesday evening.
Well, I would love to be there, but...
I wish you could be here.
Too, but I've been doing way too much traveling.
Hey, I know. I know you've been busy.
Time to do some work.
Yeah.
So, hey, John Hannigan, your name's on there twice on the list on WebEx.
Yeah, I just noticed that.
He's been cloned.
Peter Hammond yet.
Yeah, hello.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Fine, yeah, got sun here for once.
That's good. Good. You had a horrible winter.
Yeah. Mike's here as well.
Hey, yeah. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Dale's here.
Dale, we're just waiting on you.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
We would wait for hours for you.
Wow.
You go over the 20-minute rule. All right, so Jennifer Thomas is here. Bill Barnett is not here. Kathy Sulik's here. Scott on the phone?
No, he's working on some grants.
Good deal, Scott. Liz is here. Chris Nunez?
No, he's not.
Jeff Wozniak?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
Sarah's here. Peter's here. Tina? Deepak? Johan's here. Tom and Kathy are here. John Hannigan is here. Dan's here. Dale and Bill are here. Okay, so we'll give, see if Tina and Ken come on. Ken's not going to be on, but he is out looking at kids for FASDs in San Diego. All right, well, so I'll give Tina 1 minute. Anything new and exciting anyone wants to tell me? Yep. God. Nothing? How's everything at NIAAA?
We're just cruising along. Nothing comes to mind as being eventful.
You have council today, tonight, don't you?
That is true, yeah. Yep. Our closed session this evening, and then tomorrow is the open session.
Okay. And that was?
Deepak.
Someone sign on? Deepak or Tina?
Deepak. Deepak Sarkar.
Okay. All righty. And go from there. And kind of an update session, so to catch me up, because I missed the last conference call. But items to note first. And I'm going to Bill to talk about some things. I tried to arrange a time where we could have a meeting at the ISBRA RSA meeting in Bellevue. I am the president of ISBRA, and unfortunately, that requires me to be at a lot of things all at the same time. So, looking at other people's schedules, it appears that what we're going to do is to kind of have a reception brief meeting. As president, I get a suite. So we're going to meet there. I think it'll be large enough. And that will be on Sunday from 5 to 6 p.m., maybe a little bit earlier if I can look at the program. But I think there's a fetal alcohol session that goes from around till around 4:30 or so. So if you could put that on your calendars, that would be great. The second item is that we have been invited to once again to present at the Vancouver International FAS, and that will be March 4th through 7th. And they're kind of looking for a more themed approach. So if people have ideas about a theme and want to try to put something together, that would be appreciated. Hello?
Yeah.
My phone just went real fuzzy. Does everyone hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it. Seems okay now.
All right. So the Vancouver meeting, that's March 4th through 7th. And for anyone who hasn't attended, it is an extremely good meeting. The attendance is well over 1,000. They come from all over the world. And it's really worth considering. And we've been given a half day to present. So it gives us plenty of time, and we can present lots of topics. In the past, they have occasionally helped out with travel support to that as well. So it's a audience of practitioners, scientists, parents, caregivers, policymakers, from all over the world. So it's not strictly just the scientific audience. In fact, that's probably the smaller part of it. So your talk has to be geared in that direction. All right. So there were my first two items. And then, hey, Jill, do you want to update on the things that you need?
Sure. The Notice of Grant Awards should be showing up in your ERA Commons. So if you can pull those up and email me the PDF, that would be great. And then also make sure that I have your current IACUC and IRB approvals. We need to know who's speaking on each conference call for the WebEx, so please go to the Doodle poll and select the months which you could present, and then I'll take those and make a schedule for the coming year. And I think that's good.
Well, I also think about the their progress reports beginning next year.
Sir, the progress reports, it appears, are going to be the electronic versions that they've been moving towards. And one of the things that you cannot let go of is to make sure that your MyNCBI bibliographies are up to date and should house all of your consortium publications. Just make sure you're writing your grant on acknowledging your grant and your publications, and you should be okay. If it's not there, you'll need to do some steps to get it there.
And I will reiterate that it's extremely important, because the NIH will hold your funding back if you are not in compliance. So it's not the easiest thing to do on some papers, so try to keep up to date on that and make sure that Jill has those IRB and IACUC approvals and your funding notice as well, so we can keep track of everything on this end.
Yeah, and Ed, if I may, I would add, if anyone is struggling at all with the public access stuff, feel free to contact me, or I'm sure Bill Dunty would be happy to help.
That's good to know. Thank you, because I think as I've expressed, we had a little problem here on a training grant that we had, and it's not the easiest thing to deal with, and they do really hold up your funding. They don't kid around at this.
And I've been through this several times myself, and it's not pleasant on our end either. So we are highly motivated to head off these things before we have to resort to holding funding.
Okay. One other item that I need to deal with is I would appreciate suggestions for people to add on to the Science Advisory Board. We always tend to be a little lax in that. We've asked people to be it. They say they'll do it, and then they don't always participate. And we need to get people who are better able or more willing to get involved in CFAS. So if you have names and suggestions, they do not have to be in the FASD field, but they need to be good scientists, credible scientists, and be willing to put in the time and the effort to do that, okay? So any ideas for that would be appreciated. All righty. Let's see if there's anything else that I have here. No. So I've been looking at the doodle polls, the Google graph, and it seems that for the most part, we had a good month in May, and some progress was made on some things, on some of the projects that had been slow, and you all have access to these. And so I am glad to see that things are moving ahead. Those of you who are slightly behind on some of the data hopefully will catch up in the next month or two over the summer when it's a great time to test kids. And but for the most part, I think we're doing okay there. Remember, though, that you have to enter the data into the central repository, and we need to get that moving forward. So why don't we start, not on the phone, so we can't talk about the dysmorphology core. How about the informatics core? What's the status of, we were having some problems with the cross-query form, and I know that I've been approached by some people who really need access to the shared data and putting data from the various sources together. So what's the status on that, and where are we with that thing?
Okay, this is Michel here, and since Bill is not on the call, I will answer that. So we did our WebEx presentation, and we got the satisfaction from Sarah about the status of the cross query as well. There is some things called the MutaTable report available on the neural behavior side on the central repository that allows neural data to be combined with the other data sets like morphology, 3D, and so forth. So what we're doing is based on that work, we are redesigning and improving the cross query to pretty much operate the same as that MutaTable report. And for those of you, everybody has access to the central repository, can look at that and see what I'm talking about. So to answer your question regarding the cross query, we are aware of the issues, and we are working. This is pretty much like my number one priority. That's all I'm doing, is to get the cross query in a point that can be useful for everybody.
All right. Do you have a timeline on this?
We expect to have the first prototype to start testing and let us know that it's doing what it's supposed to within a month or so.
Okay. So
by the middle of July, we should expect to have a fully functional cross-query tool?
For the cross-query to be successful, I also need input from people. So there will be something out there for you guys to use and test and let us know, yeah, it's doing what it's supposed to, or no, this thing is an improvement. So I'm going to need to have people involved in testing it and give us feedback and assuring us that, yes, we're on the right track or we're not. So, yes, there will be something out there by mid-July for people to poke around and let us know if it's working or not.
All right. I hate to do this, but do you think that you could send out a biweekly email to people and let them know the status of where it is?
Oh, and sure, man.
One of the reasons that I'm pushing on this is that, you know, we have a public data access policy that we need to come into compliance with. And we do get or have gotten a few requests for how one can access, you know, our data. And I say, well, we don't have that functionality up right now to do these cross-query tools because it's a combination of dysmorphology as well as brain and behavior. And I have to tell people, right now we can't do it because we can't even think about approving your project because we don't have that functionality. And so I need it done. All right. So if we all could get biweekly, every other week, updates on the status of that, I would appreciate it. And I would appreciate making it the highest priority that you can imagine. All right.
Oh absolutely. No problem. So I will start sending you the updates. How about on the 16th?
Okay.
And make every Monday. Does that work for everybody?
Yeah. Does anyone else have any issues with the central repository?
I just wanted a clarification, Michelle.
Sure.
You said you were relying on feedback from the investigators on their success on poking the system and seeing if they're are they ready to be poking and testing now, or is that what they're waiting for the next? The next step from you?
No, that's going to be the next step. So what I'm saying is I'm going to have the cross-query fully functional by the mid-July for the initial testing. So right now, we don't have anything that's ready.
Okay. But as soon as that is, you want people trying to use it and giving you feedback right away?
Correct. In areas like, okay, it's giving the data that you expect. Is it easy to use? Do we need things, for example? I can put this together in an email if that's helpful.
Yeah, that would be good, I think. And so, keeping people informed about that along the way would be useful as well.
And sure. Yes. For example, right now the central repository, you can extract data in like common delimited format, XML format, data, any other format that you'd like to get the data from and things like that. So I'll tell you what. Once we're done with this, I'll put a follow-up email pretty much summarize what I just said. I'll send to everybody that it's on the email list here, and I'll start sending bi-week updates, the first one coming out on June 16th. How does that sound?
Works for me.
Michelle, this is Sarah.
Yes.
So are you saying that the previous phase data are also, there's no cross-query tool for that either?
You talk phase one?
Phase one or two.
No, there's no cross-query for that.
Okay, so,
see,
all right.
That's what I don't understand is because so if one wanted to compare things between phase one and phase two, one couldn't do that without self-extracting all the data.
And you can't, it's not even cross between one and two, it's even within two or within one or three.
So, I don't understand. I mean, it seems like that's, you know, a requirement of an informatics database is that you can go in there and do these things. So So we really need to get something up and going. Even if you have to go out and buy, just go buy the software you need to do it. But it's holding up a lot of progress, I think. And that makes a difference in the long run. So whatever you need to do, get it done, all right?
Got it.
All right. Anything else? I didn't mean to cut you off, Sarah. All right, but...
No, I'm good.
All right. All right. I know that the facial imaging Peter wants to present something. I think he's got some slides he wants to share with us on WebEx. So, Peter, it's late in the
morning,
so go ahead.
This is Elizabeth. I can't get on WebEx. Could you send me the slides sometime today?
Yeah. Do I have to press the share my desktop button?
I think you do, don't I?
Elizabeth, you're showing up on the list.
But I got nothing on my computer screen. I just have this little thing saying connecting.
Try looking for a icon with a yellow or a green and blue ball on the bottom and push on it.
Got it. I've got the window up. It says I'm on the meeting center, but it's not showing anything.
I am seeing Peter's slides, by the way.
Me too.
Me too.
All righty. Yep, you're on, Peter.
Okay, so this is just a 4 or 5 slides here, just to do a quick update. But because they needed some pictures, I felt it was better, you know, than just using Word. So I put some slides together. So updating on the 3 things, the kind of completion of the development project on the 3D ultrasound, extracting faces, which I talked about in April, some new face results, and some more progress on the face brain analysis. So as you know, the work on the ultrasound has been really done by Alison Noble and Tom Rackham, her PhD student at Oxford University. And in April, I showed you that they'd been, one of the things they've been doing was looking at the extract profiles through many slices, or, you know, orthogonal to this one you can show you, which is like a midline one. And I showed you some pictures like this that are these curves along those slices through the face. And then I said the next thing was to produce surfaces. And so they've done that now. And here's an example. Sorry, it's that big. It's a bit big and bold. So what you're seeing is one individual child. Of course, this is one of the infants from the past study, and it's their ultrasounds and 3D photos that we're analyzing. So on the far right, you see the face of the child at 1 year, in the middle, in green, at 1 month. And then on the left, this small patch here is what you can extract from the ultrasound of the face surface at 28 weeks. Now, alternatively, if you think of a 40-week gestation period, then that's kind of minus 3 months, 1 month, and 12 months, just to give you an idea of the separation. I may have altered the scale slightly when I was putting these into the slide, so they may not be totally consistent. But it shows you that you can extract face surfaces. And as it happens, unfortunately, only one of the 21 images that they extracted faces from is an individual for whom we have the 3D photos. So, and this is the one I'm showing you. So I could add this to a model, but in a sense, there's no point because there's just this one individual who's got all 3 stages in the sort of face description. So in a sense, this kind of completes that development study quite successfully, I think. You know, the idea was to show that you could extract face surfaces, and I wouldn't say all of them are of as good a quality as this, but certainly some. And if we could define perhaps a protocol for the ultrasonographers to actually follow, we could probably, you know, guarantee better quality on every image. And then we could add them to our models of the 1 month and the 12 month, and then do the face analysis in the usual way. The funding for that project ended the end of last month. And I think if you remember from April, what I said was that we're hoping there might be some carryover funds available maybe later in the year when this could be returned to. And Alison's keen to look at brain structures. They've just developed some new techniques where they can extract brain structures and even look at sort of aging the baby's maturity, or the fetal maturity rather, quite accurately within a few days. So that's all I'm going to say about that. If there are no questions, I'll move on to the next thing.
I have a question.
Yeah.
We finally got the WebEx on a different computer. So Peter, I've been talking with the past people about doing some brain imaging in the older kids. So I think it would be good at some point about who, you know, if they to target kids that you already have faith on. So it's just something to think about coming up in the future.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Elizabeth. Every now and then you're breaking up and I can't hear everything you say.
I said we're working on a proposal to do brain imaging in the past kids, and I just want to make sure that as we decide which kids to do brain imaging on, we make sure that it can mesh with the kids that you have the 3D face on.
Yeah. Well, they know which, you know, they gave us the images, so they know which children that we've got.
And I'm working closely with them so we can... I can get it from them.
Are they going to give you the exposure histories, Elizabeth?
Yes, we already have them, actually.
Wow.
They opened it, I think, last week. I mean, the NIAAA people might know more than I do, but I know that they've scanned about 30 kids in South Africa, and I was just informed yesterday that they actually have the exposure history on the kids that they have scanned.
Okay, good.
That's interesting, because we've not been given the exposures.
Well, you might want to inquire if it might be possible now.
Dale, do you know anything about it?
I'm surprised to hear that, actually. Are you talking with Hein or Dan Stein?
Dan Stein, and I also talked with Hein, and I personally don't have the exposure status, but I was told in an email yesterday from Dan Stein, his postdoc, that they actually have the exposure history for the kids that they scanned. And they're scanning kids who are six. So it could be that I just don't understand, maybe only some kids they're opening it up. I don't know. But I can certainly inquire.
Well, as you phrased that, it sounded like they were saying that they have the exposure data, but does that mean that they're going to give it to you?
Well, for the kids that they scanned, I think so. I mean, we have to get IRB. We can't start working on it until we submit IRB, you know, to allow them to send us the data. But, yes, in the email I got the impression that they would give it to us. And the whole idea here is that we're trying to get pilot data to submit a proposal in October to do more,
okay,
more scanning.
All right. Well, that's to work out with PASS, but that would be great if PASS is going to start opening up that data.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I'm sorry, Peter. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to just talk about the face. Now, the idea here is that we repeat the pediatrics paper analysis on the Jacobson's data, but in order, and we're doing this now on the CFAT US data, typically on the Caucasian subset. Now, rather than just redo this, we wanted to put some novelty into it. So one of the bits of novelty we thought we would put in is address this issue that, you know, we've said we would do, and that is to try and make as much as what we do available for clinical use. And we thought that the new 3D camera, which we brought to the April meeting, this one here, which we've now bought, might give us that opportunity. And this is a camera that's portable, and so you can take
pictures without lugging an enormous camera around with you. So, you know, for instance, Ken would be able to use this camera in a clinic with some training. It doesn't take a lot of training to use it, really. And it's the size of an SLR camera with this extra thing on the front, which just splits the image into two. Because the it's, you know, so narrow by comparison with the big cameras that we use normally, you have to take, to get a full coverage of the face, you have to take three pictures. So here's an example of three pictures of my grandfather. He's been embalmed, so actually he's not alive, which is why he's a bit pale. But you can see you have to take a picture from the left view and then a front view and then a right view, and then you can stitch them together to get the 3D effect. But what we'd like to do is we think it's going to be hard to do that triple of coverage of the, all angles of the face. And so what we're thinking is, what can we do if we just focus on that front view? Okay, so, you know, can we just take one from the front, and is that sufficient for what we need for the fetal alcohol work? So, and I think it is, and so that's one of the things we're going to be testing in the paper. The second way of introducing novelty into this study is to look at the most effective regions of the face in terms of the issues that we test in the pediatrics paper. That is, for instance, the baseline testing that we do is, can we discriminate between FAS, that should be FAS stroke PFAS actually, really, but I'm just using that as the abbreviation, compared to controls. And then the second thing we did in the pediatric paper was, remember, we were able to split the heavy exposure into control-like and fast-like, both from the face point of view, but also from the cognitive performance point of view. So the question is, which part of the face are most effective at doing that? And, you know, given that, for instance, this central sort of view, 3D view, is not going to, for instance, show the ears or the sides of the face very much, we want to know, you know, which region should you make sure you get a good picture of if you're going to do a single shot with this handheld camera. So I'm just a bit busy this slide, but basically what we've been doing is, first of all, looking at, you know, the discrimination between fast PFAT as a group and controls. And this is always our baseline in doing anything before we go on to do the heavy exposure stuff. And the way we do it is to estimate, I won't go into the details, but you probably know from previous calls, from previous talks, that we estimate the probability of classifying a randomly selected pair, one control and one FAS, stroke PFAS. And we've done it for various parts of the face, the whole face, and you've seen us do work on the philtrum, and I'm going down now the left side, the pictures, the midline profile, and then a new thing that we've tried, which might look a bit odd to you. It looks a bit like, you know, the Tin Man and the Wizard of Oz or something, but it's just the midline profile combined with the philtrum, combined with four little areas that correspond to the canthi of the eyes, you know, the inner and outer canthi, which is kind of that minimal area covers all the important parts that feature in fetal alcohol facial characteristics. And then we estimate the probability of doing the classification. As you can see, as you go down, the face is relatively low, and that's a kind of technical thing. I think there's so much noise in the face that's not important to fetal alcohol discrimination that it screws up the performance. And when you focus on an area that is important, like the philtrum or the midline profile, you can see you squeeze out a much better classification. So it shows you how important, and I mean, of course, this is in this data set, and this data set is of the order of, I think, you know, 20 fast PFAS and about maybe 45 controls. So it's not a big data set. So, you know, you will get various. One of the things Mike's going to do is estimate the confidence interval for these average levels of discrimination. The face part also increases the discrimination on the basic face and just the philtrum, but actually the midline profile does pretty well, as you can see. And then the next thing is, having done that discrimination, can we split the heavy exposure into fast-like and control-like, as we did with the Jacobson data? Now, I showed you in April that we could do that, and we got this signature graph like this. Remember, the green circles on the right are the heavy exposure that are control-like facially, and the circles that are red are the fast PFAS, and then the green squares are the heavy exposure subgroup who are more like the fast PFAS. And so it splits the HE into two groups. And then we overlaid the cognitive measures and showed that that was consistent. I'm ignoring that for the moment, and I'll explain why in a second. So what we've done is looked at all the face parts, and what we found is that even though they're good at discriminating on their own, like the Filtrum, you know, is very good, or the midline profile is very good at discriminating controls and fast PFAS, it doesn't do this splitting of the heavy exposure very well. And we've got a hunch that actually you need things like the malar region, which is important in doing that differentiation.
So which region, Peter?
The malar region. You know, the sort of cheeks, the sort of either side of the nose, you know, the zygoma, that area.
Okay, thank you.
The cheekbones. And we've noticed in the past that that's, seems to, you know, often when you don't get a smooth filtrum in these HE who are fast PFAS-like, they do have a very flat malar region. The mid-face is quite flat, and I think that's going to be important. So that's what Mike is doing now, is going back and looking at the malar region and see whether if we add that to those face parts combination, we can define like a minimal region that we must capture in the image. And so, you know, we can help then guide people when they're taking the images to make sure they capture the most useful part of the face. Now, before I just quickly say something about the face brain, which isn't very much, again, are there any questions?
I'm wondering if you could do the same thing as the midline profile, only do like a single line that runs through the intersection of the tip of the nose or something, like another line.
Well, that's what it is. It is a single line that runs through the tip of the nose. It's on the profile.
That's what you're working on. No.
It's just the curve.
Horizontally, I mean.
Oh, horizontally.
Yeah. Couldn't you add the malar region that way?
Oh well, we've got one, and we've got a candidate region we use in another project actually, which we're going to add. Yeah.
Peter, I have a question about, you seem to have two outliers on the FAS continuum or on the FAS diagnosis.
Yeah.
Have you identified those subjects and seen what's different about them? And not that our dysmorphology core is not perfect, but maybe there's something that's making the discrimination less than it could be.
I think when we look at those, we find that their filtrum is not as flat as the other fast PFAS, something like that. Because remember, some of these are PFAS; they're not FAS.
Right.
And they may, for instance, they may not have sort of reduced growth. They may actually be quite big individuals. They, you know, their facial growth has not been hindered as much as in the fast.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Peter,
had that same thing in the South African group where you had that one little clump that was, and they were larger kids.
Yeah, exactly.
So the data on the screen right now is from CFAS?
This is CFAS, yeah, U.S. Caucasian.
Peter, sorry. It's Sarah, sorry. So I think this is really interesting. I'm wondering, though, for the future, what about the specificity? If you were to use this clinically, one really important thing would be to distinguish alcohol affected from some other syndrome. So if we pick something that's sensitive to alcohol but not necessarily specific, will we be limiting the clinical utility?
I'm not quite sure what you mean. Do you mean look at like a differential diagnosis, look at other conditions?
Right.
Yeah, it's like that box you put together in one of your previous talks where you separated out Williams syndrome and
we are going to
facial syndrome.
Yeah, I haven't said that because I've said it before in another talk, but we are in this paper, we're going to address four syndromes. I cut Williams, 22q, Cornini de Langer, and another one I've forgotten.
So in terms of the – go ahead.
Yeah, we're definitely going to include them in some discrimination testing.
Right. Yeah, I was just thinking in terms of the new handheld camera, if you need to include a region that will also distinguish from other features.
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah. Because actually, you know, in some conditions, for instance, just knowing where the ear position is, you'd know it can't possibly be
mm-hmm.
one or the other. And that won't be captured with that camera unless you attempt to make three views of the face.
Okay, just something for the future. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay, shall I just then quickly go through these couple
yes,
of slides
please.
Here?
Sure.
In April, remember we showed you that we'd been looking at corpus callosum and philtrum. And, you know, as usual, show the sort of morph with the smoothing of the philtrum as you go from the average of control to the average of the fast group. And you see the reduction that Elizabeth and other people have found in the thickness of the corpus callosum. And then, obviously, you know, we did normalization. So what we've been doing more recently is investigating more face parts and seeing whether... they also have an effect. Now, it means doing the same sort of discrimination. What happens if you add the corpus callosum to the discriminating capability, to just the face part, but also then doing that heavy exposure split into subgroups? Unfortunately, we can't do the latter at the moment because we haven't got sufficient numbers of individuals for whom we've got a face image, a brain image, and also psych data. So that's one of the things we're going to liaise with Sarah about and identify the best psych data that, you know, we've got available for the largest numbers of individuals. But it is interesting to see what happens when you add the corpus callosum to those results. You know, I showed you this table earlier for classification. If we add the corpus callosum into that so that we build a model that includes the corpus callosum, this is what happens. So basically, it doesn't seem to improve the face. It improves the philtrum. The mid-profile doesn't change, and the face pass goes up a little. Now, obviously, the confidence intervals might be sufficient to absorb some of these, but I think, you know, a seven-point difference in the philtrum is interesting.
Peter, does the face parts analysis include the mid-profile?
Yes, it does. Can you see that? It's
yes.
Strange. Thing okay. Down the middle, this sort of curve. Yeah.
So adding the palpebral fissures doesn't add anything either.
Well, not a lot, I don't think. No, not when you've already got the profile in there. But we probably need to do more multiple tests of these, you know, to get this confidence interval, you know, because it just might be that the particular way we were splitting these in when we did the sort of testing. You know, gave this result, we might get a few points difference with other random splits of the data.
Peter, what measure from the corpus callosum went into the analysis?
It's the shape. So basically, if you remember, I haven't included the slide here, but, you know, we convert the face into the principal component vector.
Yeah.
And do the same for the corpus callosum shape. Then we bolt those two vectors together and do a principal analysis of the combined.
Okay.
So basically, you know, the combination of face and component and brain is just a sequence of numbers, and then we do, you know, classifications and various things on that.
If we add the neuropsych as well, you know, I mean, is it true in these analyses every additional piece of information necessarily improves?
It certainly appears to for just the shape.
Uh-huh.
We haven't added the neuropsych data yet because, as I said, you know, we need to talk to Sarah to work out which tests which measures to include.
Well, I encourage you to do that because I think there's a lot more neuropsych data than there is imaging data. So.
Yeah. And then just finally, I'm basically repeating what I've just said. We have had just a new tranche of images from Tatian and Leah, and we need to add those. And then we need to, as I said, talk to Sarah and work out how best to put it, which site measures to put into the shape analysis as well in the future. Sorry to take so long about that.
So Peter, I remember on the last call I asked if you could share the midline contour with us, and I didn't follow up, but could we get that from like Mike or?
Well, we'll have to write a bit of software because we never calculate the midline profile. It's all done inside, you know, inside the software. It just extracts it on the fly.
So and it doesn't save it.
It doesn't save it, no. So we would have to alter the software to do that. I hadn't realized that when after the call I spoke to Mike and he reminded me that all these sort of sub areas we look at, it never calculates them. Sorry, it never saves them. It just calculates them on the fly and does the analysis.
And
so we have to do that.
From an administrative point of view, I don't want to see a lot of efforts being duplicated. I think replications are important, but...
Well, and I think the point is that we can do a huge amount of stuff with the brain that Peter probably isn't set up to do yet. Measure that's really good.
Elizabeth, I'm trying to say is that I don't want two groups doing exactly the same thing. And
we wouldn't be.
All right. And as long as you guys are good with that because there's a lot to do, and I just want to make sure that it's, that Peter and Tatiana and you and Yoshi are comfortable with how this is all working out and going. All right. Because, I feel that Peter and Tatiana have done a fantastic job on this facial imaging. You've done a great job on the brain stuff. And I appreciate Yoshi's problems and issues. I need to make sure that Peter and Tatiana are comfortable with and that there's clear distinctions between what people are doing and that everyone's comfortable with it.
Right, but I mean, if we had one measure, and I don't care about Shantanu Joshi, that's not the point, right? So if we just like we provided them with the corpus callosum, or
right, right.
I'm just asking for that in reverse to see if we can brainstorm and come up with ideas of doing things with
all
the whole
brain. I just want to make sure everybody's comfortable with it. That's all. All right, I'm not trying to inhibit it. I just want to make sure that everyone's comfortable with it.
Well, how can we make sure of that?
I'm hoping that you guys have kind of reached an agreement about who's doing what and or what you plan on doing or your shared your IRB protocols so that you each know what you're doing.
Right.
So
we're not doing anything with the face because we don't have the face data. So we can't – we haven't agreed on anything that we're doing. We've just sent the corpus callosum contours to Peter.
All right.
So essentially right now we can't do anything with the face because we don't have the data we would need in order to even try things that we would share with.
All right, well, that may be a conversation that that Peter, Tatiana, you and I can have in the future or at RSA or something, all right?
I won't be at RSA.
RSA, okay. All righty. But so far it seems like everything is going fine. And Peter, nice presentation. It's really interesting and intriguing. How much are those cameras?
I think it's cost me about £8,250. So
right.
Add another 60%.
Okay, so under $14,000 then.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. And we should think about how we might be able to collect you more data, even on images that are not, even on individuals who have not been seen by our dysmorphology core, but who have been diagnosed by other groups as having FASD or FAS.
I like that idea.
You know, I know that, that Hannigan has a group in Detroit. Certainly the Canadians are would be interested in maybe providing some data. So I think we could round up some people to get more images quick in a more expedited fashion, even though they may not have been seen, which may cause other problems, but it's a possibility. And at that price, I think we should look into the possibility if you're interested in that.
Yeah, I think, and it'd be good to do those blinded as well. That would be interesting.
All righty. Well, that took a little longer than I thought, but that's okay. So rather than just go through everybody, I'll just ask if anyone has any fantastic data they would like to tell us.
Well, we have a paper now that one of my postdocs worked on that is now in press, which is exciting. We'll send that around, and we'll definitely let NIAAA know. I don't know if it's going to be a big splash from the media, but we will make sure that NIAAA knows. Again, I'm really excited about this PASS possibility. It sounds like, you know, they're interested in letting me lead the project, and I think it's just, it's going to be really exciting if we can get it funded. So obviously,
what's the conclusion on the paper? You said you got a paper coming out. And you didn't tell us what the results were.
Oh, I forget.
Okay.
I guess it won't be a big splash then, huh?
I guess not.
No. It's longitudinal changes in white matter, so differences between exposed and controls, and changes.
That's something that I'm very interested in, and I think that that's a very profitable line to take. And I'll explain at some future point why. But
okay, so
knows.
I'll send that paper around.
I need that as evidence for my hypothesis. So send me a copy. So.
And then Christina Eubens got a bunch of data from her hormone measures, so that's going to be moving forward, looking at pubertal hormones in.
All right. I'm going to ask if Tom or Kathy have anything to say about their gala event. We have one of the CFAS members being acknowledged at that event, so if they have anything to add.
Oh, Ed, just briefly, yes, at the top of the hour, you referred to the annual NOPES Awards reception. It's next Tuesday in Washington, D.C. Dr. Charnas is the recipient of our Excellence Award in Research and Science this year, so we're very excited about that. And he and his wife are going to be down and join us next week. So.
Well, you will enjoy his wife maybe more than Michael. She's very interesting. You should have her play. You should have her tell her to bring her flute and play.
Well, we could use a little musical entertainment. And by the way, just although not related to this group, the our other honorees, the Bonnie Buxton and Brian Philcox, they're in Canada in the Toronto area. They were the founders of this the International FASD Awareness Day, which has been recognized on September 9th every year since 1999. So they're as you know, Ed, you've been recognized by NOFAS, and you've been to many of these events. We're looking at the families and acknowledging their role, people who are doing public health, and obviously the researchers as well, and many others. So,
yeah, if you're close to Washington, it's a great thing to go to and support. And if you can get Deborah was trained by Jean-Pierre Rampal. So, and
wow.
You can get. If there's a piano there and you get Michael on the piano and her on the flute, you'll have a great time. So.
Very nice.
Wow. Good to know.
They have several CDs out, the whole family.
Wow. Oh, I know the kids.
The Charnas Quartet. Wow. All right. And in the few minutes
Thank you.
Remaining then, Sarah, any gigantic big news?
No, we have just submitted a paper yesterday. It was a revision, and we have a poster we're going to present at RSA that meets one of our PFAS-3 aims. So we're interested. We're working on that, preparing that right now.
Kathy Sulik?
Yes, not a whole lot.
You always have exciting things.
Well, we're excited because we've ordered the KIF knockout mice. And to sort of parallel what Johan is doing with the fish and to follow up on the idea that we might be affecting cilia as a primary mechanism. So anyway, we're excited to get those mice and start working on them. We're working on limb malformations in the hedgehog heterozygous animals and using that as a good model system to use for mechanism studies and showing that, in fact, the heterozygous animals are much more sensitive to alcohol-induced limb malformations as expected. But anyway, it was a necessary first step to actually prove that. So we did it.
In terms of the zebrafish thing, I just was at a meeting where Pam Hunt, who's at William & Mary, has a zebrafish model for fetal alcohol, that she has some interesting behavioral and learning deficits in. And I think it's pretty new work, but it might be interesting to look at it and see if Johan might be able to make some contributions in terms of which animals or knockouts or whatever he think might be most effective. So that's just something to think of.
I think adding a behavioral component to his analysis would be really good, and more people are studying behavior in fish, so it's doable.
Yeah, she's doing some optical imaging, or wants to do some optical imaging in the brains while they're doing these tasks.
Oh.
This sounds really kind of fascinating.
Very cool,
So that's that.
What's the name of that investigator?
Pam Hunt.
Got it. Thanks.
And she's a Skip Spear PhD, and I think, yes?
Yes.
And so well-trained. So, all right, who have I missed here? Jeff Wozniak, anything?
Nothing necessarily, except other than we are helping Ken with his remote telehealth project. So we're going to be doing some remote evaluations of facial characteristics here in Minnesota.
And, thank God.
We're almost as remote as Ukraine, so that should work.
Well, the weather must be getting nicer there now.
It is.
So, all right.
Johan, is Johan on?
Yep.
Yes, I'm on.
So what do you think of the behavior?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be great just from my interests. I'd very much like to be able to tie sort of early developmental insults into later behavior. So there are, I guess, a number of labs now that are doing more and more behavior. And I think, as alluded to, there's some really amazing imaging capabilities to track neural activity in these live zebrafish. So it could be very powerful.
Yeah, and she's interested in FASD. So, you know, that's what she's studying right now in these zebrafish. She got allergic to rats, and so she switched. And so that's it. All right, Deepak, tell me something exciting.
I'm
tell me something really exciting.
Hello?
Tell me something really exciting.
Well, we are still working on this epigenetic part. I think it's going far, but it takes time. So nothing to really report now. But I'm still missing those human plasma samples, so I'm still trying to figure out where I could get them from.
All right. Well, all right. Anybody else have anything that they would like to contribute? Then I will see many of you in a few weeks, and keep Sunday night or whatever night I set open. Like I said, I have 80 million things on my calendar to do that week, but whatever night I said, that's the night it's going to be.
Yeah, which night was that? Did anyone else hear it?
Sunday at 5 to 6.
Sunday at 5 to 6.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, maybe a little longer. We'll see. There's another reception Sunday night that I have to go to, and so, but we will get finished what we need to finish, and Jennifer, if I have to leave, we'll can take over, and I will supply some refreshments. So, all right.
Can I say something real quick? I need to relay a message. I don't know if Mike Studdy's on the phone, but Peter is. I need Mike to sign a conflict of interest form. The university's been sending him lots of notices that he has to do that for our renewal of the consortium grant. So, if you could ask him.
He did it on Monday.
Oh, he already did it. Okay.
And he never received any emails, so they've obviously been sending them to the wrong address.
Oh, okay. Well, good. It's done, huh?
All right. Well, we'll all convene in Bellevue, and everyone have a safe trip there. And it looks to be a very, very good meeting in terms of fetal alcohol stuff. So, and a number of people associated with CFOL in one way or another that we all know will be acknowledged at that meeting. So it'll be good to stay if you can for the whole meeting, but I understand. So take care. And Dale and Bill, any final? You guys always wrap this up with some brilliant comment.
We generally wrap it up with "We don't have anything."
to me, that's brilliant. So
the end.
All right.
No, it's a good call. Very good call.
All righty. Thanks a lot. Everybody have safe travels, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.